It is Friday, August the 18th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, the world responds to deadly terrorist attack in Barcelona.
Terrorists around the world should know the United States and our allies are resolved to find you and bring you to justice.
The Trump National Security Team meeting today about the U.S.-Afghan policy.
It sounds like the administration is leaning towards a modest increase in troop level, perhaps between 3,000 and 5,000 troops increased, without a termination date.
We'll also have social media and something new from Hollywood. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The police force for Spain's Catalonia region says its troopers shot and killed 4 suspects and wounded a 5th in a resort town south of Barcelona to respond to a terrorist attack. The confrontation came about 8 hours after a van swerved through a pedestrian walkway in a popular destination in downtown Barcelona, killing at least 13 people, injuring an estimated 100 or more. This man and his family were there when the driver carried out the attack.
We are really in shock because it's the first time that happened in the heart of the commercial area of Barcelona. You know that Barcelona in August, it's millions of tourists that come to visit this beautiful city, and what's happened now is going to change all the meaning of security here in this city, I believe. And as Israeli, I believe that they can make better security here in this city because millions of tourists coming here and walking on the street. And what's happened that this truck just getting the Ramblas. You know, the Ramblas is the main boulevard of Barcelona. In the heart of Barcelona, just smashing the people under the truck and get to the restaurant. It's like a jungle. It's impossible that it could happen here in this beautiful city of Barcelona. I'm in shock.
Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy calls the killings a savage terrorist attack and said that Spaniards, in his words, are not just united in mourning, but especially in the firm determination to beat those who want to rob us of our values and our way of life.
Hoy España, y más concretamente Barcelona,
he said, today Spain, and more accurately Barcelona, has received the love and solidarity we have shared with other cities and countries hit by the same terrorist brutality in other moments. He said, I want to say that we are not only united by the grief, but we are especially united by the firm belief that we will defeat those who want to take our values and our way of living away from us. Thursday's bloodshed was Spain's deadliest attack since 2004 when an al-Qaeda-inspired bomber killed 192 people in coordinated assaults on Madrid's commuter trains. Barcelona is the latest European city to experience a terror attack carried out using a vehicle as a weapon to target a popular tourist destination after similar attacks in France, Germany, Sweden, as well as Britain. British Prime Minister Theresa May said the UK stands with Spain against terror, while French President Emmanuel Macron tweeted Thursday evening, all my thoughts and solidarity from France are for the victims of the tragic attack in Barcelona. We will remain united and determined. And here in Washington, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson spoke for the Trump administration.
We offer our condolences to the loss of life and the injuries that have occurred to so many innocent people yet again. We will continue to monitor the situation. We stand ready to assist law enforcement, national security authorities in Spain, our consulates in Barcelona, and our entire Mission Spain team are currently assisting Americans in Spain who are affected by these events. We ask U.S. citizens in the area to let your loved ones know you are safe. Terrorists around the world should know the United States and our allies are resolved to find you and bring you to justice.
That is U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. International Edition's Lori London asked former Justice Department National Security official Jamil Jaffer how governments can protect people from these types of attacks that seem to come without warning.
Well, look, you know, I mean, it's a very hard situation. When you live in a free society, it's very difficult to protect against committed terrorists who want to take out a group of people. The best thing you can do is to maintain as good a surveillance on folks that you suspect of being terrorists as you can within the law, and then take precautions where you can. But the reality is that a committed terrorist is going to be very hard to stop, particularly when they're hiding in plain sight, and when they're okay with killing a small number of people. It's really the mass casualty attacks that are much easier to, or that are, you're more likely to catch because it takes a bigger planning effort. But, you know, if Europe is looking for examples about things they might do, they might look to the Israelis who have suffered this problem for, you know, dozens and dozens of years. Now, you know, the Israelis have made a fundamental choice. They've decided to give up some measure of civil liberties and freedom in order to live more safely. And even then, they can't stop terrorist attacks in Israel. So it's not, you're never going to be 100%. But there are things you can do if you're willing to make those choices.
ISIS is claiming responsibility for this. Is it likely that it truly was an ISIS attack or an ISIS-inspired attack?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to tell here because, the ISIS claims responsibility have been a little cloudy here. One, I saw they did say that these were soldiers of ISIS or of their ilk. And then I've heard elsewhere that they've claimed responsibility. It's unclear to me exactly what happened. But at the end of the day, it's very likely this was ISIS-inspired in the sense that we've seen a lot of these, right? So there are two kinds of ISIS operations. There are ones where they actually have operatives that are in the Syria-Iraq region, and they send them out to either foment an attack or conduct themselves. And then there's these ones where they radicalize people who are already in these countries, whether here in the United States or in Europe, and then they encourage them to conduct their own attacks. And oftentimes when they use common things like a van, it could be a inspired attack.
And it sounded like there may have been another attack that was thwarted south of Barcelona.
Yeah, the one thing that does suggest that this may have been a more coordinated operation, there's a few things here that suggest it might have been something more than just an inspired attack. One, as you point out, is the fact that about 70 miles south of Barcelona, in I believe an area known as Cambrils, the police identified some folks who tried to conduct a similar attack and injured a handful of people, a couple seriously, and I believe four people, I think, now have now been killed, four suspected terrorists have been killed in that incident. And then another piece of this, two suspects were arrested after trying to hide out in a restaurant, and one suspected person involved in this attack, may have been involved in this attack, was killed trying to run a police checkpoint. And so there are enough people moving around and, a couple of places a little distance apart that's just potential coordinated attacks. And there's one other piece, which is that yesterday, last night, there was an explosion in a town about 120 miles south of Barcelona that people think might be connected to this attack. And that involved large amounts of propane and butane being stored in a house that blew up. This is a situation where there's still a lot more investigation to be done. The connections here are not clear, but there's at least a potential connection between the explosion, the events in Cambrils, 70 miles south, and then the events in Barcelona, and then the couple of the guy trying to run a checkpoint.
How likely is it that we will see things like this? I mean, we did recently see something similar with the whites at the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. But how likely is it that we would have something even on a bigger scale here in the United States?
Look, it's very concerning. The fact that these are happening in Europe, in free societies there, raise the concern that similar things can happen here. We've seen now for a while ISIS-inspired or ISIS-carried-out attacks in Europe. I mean, we've seen some of those here in the United States, including, the San Bernardino shootings just a couple of years back. And so these things are very real, and they're very concerning. It should concern Americans. And at the end of the day, what really has to happen here, the reason we've stayed so safe from al-Qaeda over the last, number of years since the 9/11 attacks is that we've put al-Qaeda on the run, and we've chased them down at every turn in every hideout. And it makes it very hard for them to plan and coordinate attacks. We haven't really effectively taken that same fight to ISIS. We have at some level, the sense that we started working with our Iraqi allies, we've recaptured Mosul. But truth be told, they still have strongholds, and they're still very much present in the Syria theater. And so while, there is a discussion in the current administration about, maybe tamping back on our Syria efforts, the reality is the cause of the fight there is the Assad regime, and the Iranian and Russian support Assad regime. Until we do something about that, ISIS will still have a cause for war, and that cause for war will turn against Europe and against the United States. And we have got to go take the fight to ISIS and deal with the underlying problem with the Assad regime and the underlying activities of Iran and Russia in that region.
That is Jamil Jaffer, former Justice Department national security official. He was speaking with my colleague Lori London. And before we conclude our reporting on the Barcelona attack, let's see what's being said on social media. International Edition's Andrew Palchewski is here with the latest.
Ever since news of the Barcelona terror attack first broke on social media on Thursday, it's remained a trending topic around the world. And sadly, we've seen things play out in almost a formulaic kind of way on social media, something we've seen before in other terror attacks. First, you have the initial breaking news and the swirling information as people try to figure out what's going on. Then you start to see the photos and the videos from the scene. In this case, people are lying on the ground, bloodied, after that van plowed through them. Then you begin to see people use social media to contact their friends and loved ones. In fact, the national police in Spain encouraged people to check in with their friends and family on social media, as did the U.S. consulate in Barcelona. They said if you're a U.S. citizen in Barcelona and you're safe, please let friends and family know, including by updating your status on social media. This can be a valuable tool in these instances when phone lines get jammed and there's not a lot of ways to communicate. Oftentimes, people can get through on social media. And then as the news about the death toll is released and confirmed, many people offering their condolences for the victims and the city of Barcelona. Among them, First Lady Melania Trump, who offered her thoughts and prayers on Twitter, and President Trump, who tweeted, "The United States condemns the terror attack in Barcelona, Spain, and will do whatever is necessary to help. Be tough and strong. We love you." Now, that tweet getting a lot of attention, but another tweet from President Trump sent shortly after that one, also getting a lot of attention, but for negative reasons. President Trump tweeted, "Study what General Pershing of the United States did to terrorists when caught. There was no more radical Islamic terror for 35 years. Now, this tweet seems to be referring to a story that Trump mentioned during his campaign for the presidency, that American General John Pershing reportedly dipped bullets in pig's blood and used them to shoot Muslim rebels in the Philippines. Now, the problem with this is that the story appears to be fake, or at least can't be corroborated. People immediately taking issue with this on social media, saying that it highlights behavior that's un-American, that it's a lie, and some even saying that it tarnishes the memory of General Pershing. But even still, people continuing to share the president's tweet, talking about this story and these bullets dipped in blood. It's another instance where misinformation can spread very quickly on social media and be taken as fact.
That is International Edition's Andrew Palchewski. You can follow Andrew on Twitter at APAL. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And our program, International Edition, can be found at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. White House says President Trump, Vice President Pence, and their national security team will meet at the presidential retreat at Camp David. That's in the state of Maryland, outside of Washington, later today. They'll be discussing Afghanistan. The Trump administration has been preparing a new strategy designed to end the 16-year-old conflict, which happens to be the nation's longest war. According to the Hill publication, the meeting will discuss whether another 3,000 to 5,000 troops will be needed to combat the Taliban insurgency, as well as threats from al-Qaeda and the Islamic State militants. There are currently 8,400 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Our Defense Secretary Jim Mattis says the president is close to making a decision on the strategy. He said one option would be to use security contractors instead of sending in more troops. VOA's Victor Beatty asked RAND Corporation South Asia analyst Jonah Blank for his assessment.
Reports we've gotten so far, it sounds like the administration is leaning towards a modest increase in troop level, perhaps between 3,000 and 5,000 troops increased, without a termination date for their stay, and probably a somewhat relaxed terms of engagement. However, if anyone thinks that this is really going to change the overall trajectory of the war, I'd counsel them to look back on the past 14 years of history.
In an opinion piece in the Washington Post on Wednesday, the former National Security Advisor to President George W. Bush, Stephen Hadley, wrote that the Trump administration can deliver another blow against terrorism after victories in Iraq and Syria. He said the Islamic State Al-Qaeda seek to expand their presence in Afghanistan, but virtually no one, including the Taliban, support them. They can be defeated there, just as they were pushed out of Iraq and Syria, but it will require U.S. counterterrorism forces to continue operating alongside Afghan security forces. That pretty much sounds like much more of the same.
It does, and in the past 14 years since the war has at least somewhat escalated, the U.S. has been waging a counterinsurgency and a counterterrorism campaign. From the very earliest days, it was resourced at a very low level. It only gradually ramped up in the early years and then only significantly ramped up in 2009 with the Obama administration. And none of that worked. If 100,000 U.S. troops and tens of thousands of other troops from partner nations were unable to achieve this goal, it's hard to see how a few thousand more from an already low baseline is going to have a radically different impact.
Well, in a rare open letter to President Trump, the Taliban said that the military situation is far worse than you realize, and sending more troops would be self-destructive. Was this an extraordinary move by the Taliban? Will it be considered?
Whether it will be considered, I can't say, but it is an extraordinary move. It suggests that the Taliban has been following U.S. political developments very closely. It sounds as if the Taliban author of the letter realizes that there is a lot of skepticism in the current administration about the war in Afghanistan.
RAND Corporation's Jonah Blank also told VOA's Victor Beatty, given that the U.S. is more focused on other trouble spots such as North Korea and Venezuela, the Taliban might be trying to play on the divisions of views on Afghanistan within the Trump administration.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
President Trump finds himself in a political firestorm this week after his shifting stance on who is responsible for last Saturday's violence in the city of Charlottesville, Virginia, stemming from a protest organized by white nationalist groups. Mr. Trump's remarks blaming both sides for the violence have drawn condemnation from both Democrats and Republicans and come at a time when the president's poll ratings continue to weaken. We get more now from VOA's national correspondent, Jim Malone.
Wait a minute. I'm not finished.
In his feisty exchange with reporters at Trump Tower, the president insisted that both sides were to blame for the violence and the Charlottesville protests.
I watched those very closely, much more closely than you people watched it. And you have you had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now.
Trump's comments were denounced by Democrats and by several Republicans, including House Speaker Paul Ryan, who argued on Twitter that white supremacy is repulsive. There can be no moral ambiguity. Republican Senator Cory Gardner spoke at a town hall in Colorado.
The KKK, the neo-Nazis, and the white supremacists, like I said earlier, Go back to your cave.
Republican National Committee Chair Ronna Romney McDaniel defended the president, even as she denounced far-right hate groups.
We don't want your vote. We don't support you. We'll speak out against you. The president has said so, the vice president.
On Monday, Trump denounced racist hate groups after he came under tremendous pressure to revise an earlier statement on Saturday that condemned the violence on many sides. The controversy demonstrates the president's combative nature, says Julie Pace.
In the end, this is a 71-year-old man who believes what he says. He is unable to be controlled, and he really chafes at being controlled. So the question now is, how does he go forward?
Trump often takes criticism personally, says Republican analyst Scott Faulkner.
He has some rhetorical flourishes about the little man, the forgotten man, and the country in general. You scratch the surface a little bit and it goes back to about him.
The president finds himself under fire at a time when his approval rating has dropped below 40% in many polls, says analyst Larry Sabato via Skype.
It's chaotic and confused, and just about everybody sees it that way. He has the lowest approval ratings of any president since polling has been taken for the first 200 days of a presidency.
The firestorm over the president's remarks came on the same day as funeral services for Heather Heyer, who died Saturday after a car rammed into a crowd of counter-protesters in Charlottesville. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Throughout Italy, you'll find castles, monasteries, and villas dating back to the 11th century. But there's hundreds of them decayed over time and because of neglect. Now, an initiative by the Italian State Property Agency, backed by the Ministry of Tourism, is giving away these properties to qualified applicants who will restore these treasures to boost slow tourism favored by trekkers, pilgrims, and bike lovers. Roberto Reghi is the director of the Italian State Property Agency. He says overall it's more than 300 properties. In 2017, we've already received 210,000 applications for the first 100. It's an extraordinary success. Owners are required to show restoration plans with some kind of facility, for example, a restaurant, maybe a museum or a clinic. Depending on the project plan and kind of agreement, owners would get property rights from 6 to 50 years. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. You know, there's a new film out there starring Oscar nominee Samuel L. Jackson, Salma Hayek, and Gary Oldman. It's called The Hitman's Bodyguard, and it's currently in the theaters. And as VOA's David Byrd tells us, the fast-paced action comedy has Golden Globe nominee Ryan Reynolds hired to protect Jackson's character, who also happens to be his worst enemy.
I'm a AAA-rated executive protection agent. And you're the most wanted hitman in the world. My job is to keep you out of harm's way.
Ryan Reynolds plays Michael Bryce, a former special agent turned bodyguard who is charged with guarding Samuel L. Jackson's character, Darius Kincaid, a notorious hitman. Kincaid is set to testify at the International Criminal Court against Gary Oldman's character, Vladislav Dukovich, a genocidal warlord on trial in The Hague. Bryce has to get Kincaid from London to the Netherlands without both of them getting killed. The film features several action comedy standards like car chases, fights in narrow hallways, things blowing up, and gunfights. It also features machine gun-like and often profane banter between the co-stars. Samuel L. Jackson says that he had no problems adding the colorful language to the script.
I just like the fact that it was a movie. Yeah, there's a lot of action, but there are a lot of words. And the words are, you know, important, and the words are poignant, and the words are funny.
Mexican-born Oscar nominee Salma Hayek plays Sonia Kincaid, who is behind bars and is featured in only a couple of scenes. But Jackson's character is willing to risk his life in order to rescue her. Sonia also shows a gift for the profane invective, and Hayek says that she loved playing a character with no filter.
Oh, it was so liberating to have that permission to have no censorship or boundaries. She just does and says whatever she wants and thinks, and she's afraid of nothing, and she lets you know where you're standing, for sure, you know, and she's witty, and I did feel a great sense of freedom.
Reynolds' character used to be a superstar agent, but has been down on his luck until he gets the assignment to protect Kincaid. The 40-year-old Canadian says that he learned a little bit about law enforcement from his older brothers, one of whom is a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
He's into that world. He loves coming to set, loves coming and watching the stuff, but I'm as into his world as he's into mine, so I love going with him to his precinct and checking it out and seeing what he's doing day to day.
Samuel L. Jackson says he hopes that audiences catch on to the good time the actors were having making this film.
Part of a movie being fun for an audience to watch is the people on screen were actually having fun. Sometimes it doesn't work, but in this case, you know, we were having a good time laughing.
The Hitman's Bodyguard is rated R for strong language and violence throughout. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And many thanks to you, Dave. Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala Yousafzai, who was shot by a Taliban gunman for speaking out for girls' rights to an education, has been accepted at the University of Oxford in England. 20-year-old activist shared word of her acceptance on Twitter and included the screenshot of her congratulations notice. She plans to major in philosophy, she says, as well as politics and economics, the favorite degree of many of Britain's top leaders. Malala will be studying at Lady Margaret Hall, that's an Oxford college, whose notable alumni include the late Benazir Bhutto, the one-time leader of Pakistan, and a hero of Yousafzai's, and Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi, a fellow Nobel Peace Prize winner. Yousafzai won international renown, you might remember, back in 2012 after she was shot by a Taliban gunman in Pakistan as a teenager. She went on to Birmingham, England to revive from all of that and went on from there to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here today. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Kelvin Fowler, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a super Friday.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction in any country of any individual who committed, conspired to commit, or aided or abetted in the commission of the murder of U.S. citizen Joel Shrum. On March 18, 2012, Shrum, 29, was shot and killed on his way to work in Taiz, Yemen, by a gunman riding on the back of a motorcycle that had pulled up alongside his vehicle. At the time of his death, Shrum was an administrator and English teacher at the International Training and Development Center, one of the longest-standing international development organizations in Yemen. A few days after the attack, the terrorist organization Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula claimed responsibility for the murder. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. You can follow Rewards for Justice on Twitter, @rewards4justice. More information about the Shrum Reward offer is located on the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net. Anyone with information on this case can contact the Rewards for Justice office via the website, email info@rewardsforjustice.net, phone 1-800-877-3927 in North America, or mail Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.